Hi everyone, this is John Farrell, Senior Editor for TabletopicGamingTrend.com, talking to gaming designer M. Allen Hall. It's really great to have you on the program. I met you at PAX Unplugged recently, and I was impressed by the work that I saw there. I just want to hear more about your experience creating it and what it's like being an independent RPG designer in this day and age. It's a complicated time for you, I think.
Yes, there's always a lot going on. And thank you very much for having me on. It was great to meet you. And it's great to be here.
And it's funny, we were talking a little bit before we started recording, you and I actually live within like 15 minutes of each other, but we wouldn't have known about each other were it not for the convention.
Yeah, it's honestly something wonderful about PAX Unplugged being in Philadelphia is there are so many people in and around Philadelphia that do so many things. It's just so great to have that right there in our backyard.
Yeah, and it's nice to get people who appreciate. Philadelphia is a wonderful city for nerds. I don't know exactly how that happened, but I know there are a lot of designers of video games, independent film, which I also write about, and RPGs, and PAX Unplugged was just a great opportunity to bring us all together.
Absolutely.
Do you, and I want to talk some more specifically about your work. Most of what it consists of is supplements. And it's also interesting, if I'm correct, that those supplements are multi-system. They're sort of 5e and also more Borg inspired.
Yes, that was a good bit of what I did last year, was focusing on things that writing a supplement, writing a dungeon, writing a module that you could use for any type of game. So it's there. You try to write them where the actual text, the descriptions of what you're doing, where you're going, doesn't depend on what system you're playing. It's a description of a room. Like there's no stats involved. Like it could be a description of a room in any game. And then I'll include numbers and stats for people for some popular games, but you could then take it for any game. D&D I usually include because 5e is obviously the most popular, the most widely played game. And Morkborg I like to include because it's my personal favorite game to play.
I'm a huge fan of Morkborg as well. And something I was impressed at PAX that I wrote a little bit about recently is how much it's exploded. It seems like it's way easier to design for than 5e because the numbers are smaller and easier to work with. And it's instantly recognizable to people. And it has created this wonderful independent scene of people making things that are compatible with it.
You're absolutely right. I think as far as designing for it, like you said, a stat block for 5e, I can't even put like the smallest little enemy on less than a whole page. And for Morkborg in the modules that I write, I'll put every stat block for the entire module fits on one page. So it's a completely different thing. And the guys that designed it, Pele and Johan Noor, did a really good job of making it accessible for people. And their third-party license is very much like, look, meet these couple of requirements, you can write whatever you want. And so people do. And it's wonderful.
And you've got, well, before I get to things you have coming out, you said earlier that you had sort of been designing recently. Where did you get your start and how did you decide this isn't just something you want to do for fun? You want to put in the monumental effort to have it be something you're doing consistently and trying to make some money off of.
Yes. So I've only been playing tabletop role-playing games for 4 or 5 years now.
Wow.
Before that I had been a writer. So I actually have a series of fantasy novels that I've written that they didn't go very far. It was fun to write, but you know, that being in the indie author like genre fiction scene is a whole different beast that I really wasn't interested in competing with. So I did that and I was sort of like, okay, this is fine. But then I started, literally the first thing I found was Morkborg, and I saw what people were putting out there. And I essentially took a dungeon that I had used for something else. And I was like, I could make this a Morkborg module and other people could play it. And people did. And I was like, wow, that was really awesome. Like I made this and then people took it to their table and they said, we're going to play this thing. And that sort of just kicked it off. And so I started with those modules. And over the course of last year is when I really got into trying to publish things more seriously. And over the course of the year, I moved from doing all these supplements for other systems to trying to do more of my own complete games. So at the end of the year, I published sort of a full role-playing game as opposed to just like one pagers, like rules light kind of things.
Is that Sprinkles is missing the full game?
Yes, it is.
Could you talk a little bit about that? It's the cover is wonderful and sells a lot of the concept of the game on its own.
Yes. So Sprinkles is Missing is a tabletop role-playing game designed to be accessible for people down to about the age of 7. So usually what I say is 7 to 12 are going to love it. And adults actually have a lot of fun playing it. I don't make any promises about teenagers because nobody can ever guess what a teenager is going to like. the game itself, you play elementary school students at a magical elementary school, and your school's mascot, Sprinkles the Unicorn, has gone missing. And so you're going to go off into the enchanted forest next to your school and try to find him. And so I structured the game to be both accessible to young and new role-playing game players, as well as runners. And I've gotten feedback from people that are like, I've never run a role-playing game before, but I read the book and it made it so I could do it. And that's what I wanted. I put lots of information in there so that you're not doing a lot of the improv, which is intimidating to a lot of people considering being a game manager, running a game, is that idea. Like, what if I don't know what to say? What if I don't know what happens? I try to like take a lot of that out in that game and make it so that it gives you everything you need to play the sort of these full role-playing game sessions.
I'm interested in the fact that you transitioned from book publication to RPG book publication. How is that different on every level, though, conceptually and in terms of the nuts and bolts of completing a release and getting it out there?
It's sort of start. So publishing a novel is very easy these days with Kindle Direct Publishing. So I'm self-published on Amazon, but so are, you know, a million other people. And so you have huge competition. Even recently, there was some news story about some author that lost their book deal because they got caught review bombing other authors in their niche. So it's like very competitive. People can only read so much at a time. And so there are expectations about what you as an author are going to provide to readers. Production was very expensive. I was writing 350 to 400 page books, 100,000 to around 100,000 words each. And each of those needed to be edited. Because if you've got typos, the readers are going to be like, one star, you're done. And so you're spending money on editing, you're spending money on cover art and all to fight for these readers. And you're making like a dollar a book. So it was discouraging trying to get people to read your stuff. It's like, look, it's cheap. Even when I was giving away the book at some point, it's like, look, just, hey, I just want people to read this and tell me that they like it. And it was just, couldn't make it happen. So that's sort of put me off of continuing in that scene. Switching to role-playing games has been great. It's like, so a lot of times role-playing games are one page, or it's a zine that's 16, 20 pages. I can write that in a weekend, edit it and illustrate it in 2 weeks and like get it out there. And people in the reception is always like, oh, this is really cool. I read your thing and I loved it. Even if people don't play it, it's like, it's a lot more accessible rather than asking somebody to read a 400 page book and tell me that they like it.
It's so surprising. This is the first time I've ever talked to someone that even successful designers I've talked to have said that role-playing publication is just the most difficult thing they've done and not particularly lucrative. I think because it has a similar issue to books where there are lots of people who are creating things, but the market and the audience are still pretty small.
I definitely agree. So I will agree with you that it is not very lucrative. I'm happy. I have a day job, so I'm happy if my role-playing game work, if it pays for itself, that's good. That would be a great year is a year when I'll say, hey, I did all this stuff, but in the end I broke even. Like, I'd be happy to break even. I think maybe this year I will, but regardless, yes, you're right. So the role-playing game, while there are very enthusiastic fans, and to me, their fans are very nice and they want to give you feedback and they want to interact with you. It's a much smaller market than novels. So like I said, well, novels, there are, you know, whatever, I mean, there are statistics you can get from Amazon, but there are thousands of novels published every day. right? Just on Amazon, the self-published novels. And so you're sure the novel reading market is a lot bigger, but there's so many more people that you're going to be competing with. I prefer the smaller side. I prefer this where I can have personal interactions with people that read my stuff and liked it rather than fighting against a million other people.
And keeping that in mind, how do you go about deciding which of your projects you want to work on? I'm sure that you have a lot of ideas you're constantly working on. I'm even just looking at what you've already put out. It covers a lot of ground between this high school style fantasy adventure, and you've got a backrooms adventure. I'm sure there's got to be some kind of balancing between what you're personally interested in and how you think something might be marketable.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, I have a list in my phone, just on the notes app or something, of game ideas. And, you know, I'll get an idea, and my idea might be two words, dead spaceship. That goes in there. And then I'll come back to it and I'll think, what could I do with this? And that's the dead spaceship is one that I think I'm actually going to be able to do something with later this year. I had the idea probably 9 months ago. I put it in my phone, and over time I thought about it. I'm like, I have a story for what that is. And it's sort of the question was, how am I going to tell this story? Is it going to be a standalone role-playing game? Is it going to be a module for some sci-fi role-playing game that's already out there? How can I turn this story I have in my head into something that people can interact with? And it could have been a novel. Like I said, it's a story in my head. Like, I could have written that as a novel, but I'm not interested in doing that anymore. So I'm getting closer to deciding on how I want to present that and put that out in the world. But that's the sort of thing. I've always got a list, and I'll revisit the list every once in a while. And when I put something on the list, I'll see something that's been there and says, oh, I think I know what I could do with that now. But I tend to want to write and do things quickly. So the big projects, you know, like the Sprinkles Is Missing was my biggest project. That was a 70 page book that took a while. And that was I didn't have time. I wasn't able to do other things while I was doing that. And I didn't really like that. I want to be able to get an idea. You know, my highest selling product by volume is this game Unhallowed. It's a horror journaling game. It's essentially one piece of paper folded in half is all the text is like 1500 words. And I wrote that, illustrated it, and published it in like 2 days. And that's been my highest selling product of everything I've made. I don't know what it is, but like, I want to be able to do those little things that, you know, people might actually play and enjoy, rather than putting out a 100-page book that, like, yeah, maybe a couple people will write it, but getting people to convince other people to play at a table, not always going to happen.
And it's almost that the things that make RPGs so great from the player's perspective make it difficult from the designer, because if you put out a game that I like, I can get it once and have hours or days of entertainment worth. Which, you know, it doesn't really make great recurrent spending for me coming back to you and trying to get more products.
You're absolutely right. And that's why, this is not something that I have done, but that's why you see companies releasing, you know, expansion rules for games. Like, you think Wizards of the Coast, right? Every, whatever it is, 3 months, 4 months, 6 months, they've got another set of rules with more monsters or more character options, those sort of thing. They have to keep bringing new stuff out, because you're right. You could just download the free basic fifth edition rule set and you could play for the rest of your life. You don't need to spend a dime on any of those things. But as if I want you to buy my stuff, so I'm not going to encourage that kind of behavior. But it's hard. I want to make things that people can play. I want things to be replayable. I don't want something where you buy my book and you play it once and then you throw the book away. That's not what I'm looking for. So you're right. It is a hard balance, especially with some of the one player stuff. Journaling in particular, like, you can tell a very interesting story, but if you bought a whole book to tell this interesting story, going back to the beginning, telling the same or even just a slightly different story again is hard. And that's a hard sell sometimes.
I have really been surprised by how much the solo journaling subgenre has grown, but it makes sense because people want to be involved in RPGs, and that's one of the easier ways that you can start getting involved without having to get five people together consistently.
Absolutely. And so this year I've got three releases that are anywhere between 50 and 100% done, and they're all solo games. There's a big market of people out there that want to play role-playing games that don't have a table that they can just bring it to, that don't want to play online. You know, there's, for any number of reasons, a one-player game appeals to them. And there's a lot of people like that. And so that is a lot of my focus this year. So Sprinkles was last year was definitely a, you need, it's at least two people, if not better, at like four or five people. But if you don't have that, you know, this year I'm going to be putting out some solo games.
And am I right that your next game, Godspark, is going to be a solo game as well?
Yes. And so that, if you, so that game is, and it's definitely, it's not journaling. Journaling is something that triggers a lot of good feelings in people that maybe they want to be a writer and they really like that writing exercise. And then it does the exact opposite in other people. They hear journaling, they're like, whoa, I don't want homework. All right. I just want to play a game. So this is going to be an adventure game. And it's very much exploration, fighting. You're telling a story, but you don't have to record it in any way. You play, you try to win. You know, it's definitely there clear victory conditions and ways you lose. And you're probably going to lose more than you win. And that's what I'm aiming for. I want with that game, the goal is something you play, you lose, and you immediately want to play again because you see, I could have done this better. I should have made that decision there. That kind of thing.
It's so interesting because most of the solo games put a lot of work on the player because it's sort of the only way they can do it. They set some parameters and say, you'll roll some dice and that will guide how you want to craft your story. How do you approach designing a game trying to not do that, to put more structure on it, but still make it something that people have decision-making points in?
For me, I like putting either what we call a clock. So have something that's going to progress over the course of the game to an end point. There's definitely going to be an end point in the games that I'm writing. So even the ones that are journaling or more free form, there's clear, this is how the game ends in there. So with Unhallowed, that's in the structure of what's called a depth crawl. And so each turn, your stress goes up and you add your stress to your dice roll and that gives you the prompt. But if you ever roll, if the two ever add up to 20 or more, you hit the last prompt and you're done. And so I model a lot of my games, a lot of the mechanics, rather than like playtesting it 100 times to see how many prompts you get. I'll build a model of it in using computer code and say, hey, if the stress starts at 3, how many prompts do people get? Well, what if I make it 4? What if I use a D6? What if I use a D8? So I'll do a lot of that modeling in the computer. You know, then the computer can play the game a million times and tell me, well, I got this prompt this many times. This was the 90th percentile of how many prompts I got, that kind of thing. So I do use that a lot. So I can make sure that the games have a fixed endpoint. So you're not just like going on forever. Cause some people are into that. I'm not really, I wouldn't want to play a game like that, that just goes on forever. And so that's what the games I try to design. Yeah.
And for anyone listening, Godspark is going to be on Kickstarter January 23rd. You can make sure you're paying attention to it. I'll have a link to that below when that's ready. And it should be, according to the author, it should be around 45 minutes to 60, which is a nice arc. You know, you're not giving a full evening to it, but it's enough time to get something developed and move from point A to point B with some interesting problems along the way.
Yes. So that game in the playtesting that I've done, usually the first game is about an hour. You probably have to spend a half an hour reading the book. And then the first playthrough takes closer to an hour. But once you've got the rhythm of it figured out, the turn order figured out, you're not referencing the flow sheet every turn to see what happens next, it's probably down to half an hour. You can get through a game. The goal there is that you can play it. And I want you to turn around immediately, be like, set it back up for playing again, because I could do better. I want to get at this. I want to do this. I want to beat it this time.
And I'm sure it's difficult to tell right now because there are so many things you are working on that you can't necessarily decide which one you want to do next. But how has your thoughts about RPGs changed as you've seen this solo trend start to get bigger and open up? And specifically, you're doing different things with it than I've seen anyone else do so far.
What I think it's done for me is given me more options. A lot of even indie role-playing games out that you see out there are, they're trying to essentially take a bite out of 5e D&D 5e's market. So it's like, hey, this is a high fantasy role-playing game. You're going to get together with your friends, and you're all going to go out and fight dragons. And so they're clearly being like, hey, play our game instead of D&D. With solo games in particular, most, while there are mechanisms, there's a lot of people that play D&D style games without a, as a solo player, the role player, there are tools to allow you to play without a dungeon master, those sort of things. What I see it is as, I want to try different kinds of games. I want to make a game that you're playing that you, yeah, you're role playing. But it's not like I'm doing this instead of doing that. And so I want to play this game because this is the game I want to play right now.
It's a shame because I've seen so many games that are good and deserve attention, but they're close enough to D&D that people won't pay attention to them, and so they just sort of got lost in the years. But it makes a lot of sense to, instead of trying to attack that, do something different, set yourself apart narratively and mechanically, and maybe also try to look at a different classification of audience who wouldn't necessarily be interested in D&D to start with.
Absolutely. And I've sort of tried to aim that a bit with one of my one page games. It's called Sneaky Witches, and it is a role playing game, but it's so close to a board game that when I'm talking to people about it at conventions, I often say this is like a bring your own dice board game, which is essentially what's called a print and play. But you know, you're given a role, so it's role playing. But it's very much, hey, this has got nothing to do with dragons. This has got nothing to do with fantasy. Here's a game. I'm going to give you a character, and you're going to do some things in this game. You're going to try and win this game. And if you don't do those things, you're going to lose. And it's sort of very much, hey, this is very much a game. It's got nothing to do with role-playing games. Don't even worry about that label, because you're not going to be painting miniatures for this. Here's something that you can play. Because people want to play games. And so giving them those options, I think, is important. And I think that's niche I'm trying to carve here.
You know, I talked to a number of designers at PAX who said, like, the people who came up to them to start talking about their games didn't necessarily know that much about role-playing before. And if you can say this is closer to a board game, you're kind of introducing them to something new without the whole complexity of having to get a game master and having to learn the social dynamics that come along with a full complicated role-playing game. Is it something that is deliberate as a part of the design, or just sort of came about as you're preparing these new releases?
I think that just sort of came about. It was, you know, I had the idea for the game and I made it. And then once I made the thing that I wanted to play, something that I enjoyed making and interacting with as I was building it, then I said, how can I pitch this to people that may or may not know about D&D? So sometimes it's very easy to be like, oh, this is like D&D except this. But for a lot of the things that I make, it's not even close. So I say role-playing games, or, you know, the sign on my booth says role-playing games. But then when people come and they're talking to me about it, which is the great thing about conventions, is even if people don't even know, have no idea what you do, a lot of times they'll come over and chat, and they'll give you a chance to, you know, give your pitch and explain what you've got. You know, I think, what's the pitch for this game? And so for some of them, this is just like a board game. If you've got two regular dice, two D6s, I don't even say D6s sometimes, I just hold them up. It's like just regular dice, you can play this game. And that's something that I've been also working on as far as accessibility goes, especially for the smaller games, really focusing on making sure they're only using six-sided dice or regular playing cards, trying not to require a lot of the other role-playing game paraphernalia that it's going to decrease my audience. Like if I immediately say, oh, you need a D12 for this or a D30, you know, people at the table will be like, yeah, whatever, I don't know what that is.
Yeah. And in terms of how you're crafting these games, there's a big difference between writing a novel where you are expressing something and you know the audience will take it and read it and you don't really know what they'll do with it, or you hope they'll take something away. But with the game, the entire point of it is they are interacting with it. Does that change? You know, you said you want to make something that you would enjoy playing, but does it change the analysis or the development of something to know that it's something that people will be interacting with, and that's a core piece of the experience.
Yes. And it actually, I find it helps, especially with the rules, because a big part of all role-playing games, and all games have rules, right? And a big thing you see on, if you go on, say, Reddit, and you're looking at role-playing game forums of either specific role-playing games or generally, there's always questions about rules. Like, how do I do this? How do I do that? And especially when you've got a solo game, I've got to trust and expect that people are not going to play by the rules that I put down. They're going to change things they don't like. They're going to miss things. They're going to forget things. And so I try to make things as clear and easy to understand and easy to read as I can, but it's not always going to work. And hopefully people will still be able to have fun with what they do get, with what I have given them. And so that's absolutely part of it is, you know, I can't 100% trust or expect every person to read what I've written and interpret it and implement it the exact same way, which is on one hand fun, because a lot of times people say, oh, I did this, and I'll be like, oh, that's actually a better, that's a better way to do it than the way I put it. But yeah. So it's all these things are going to be open to interpretation. And then particularly with solo games, when you don't have to argue with somebody who had a different interpretation, you just have your own, then you're going to play the game you want to play.
And what has it been like having these things out there and receiving feedback from people where they did things you might not have expected, or took directions you didn't think were possible?
It's mixed, because, you know, I'll have, you know, written something that I think is clear, and it'll be, say it's a mechanic that I think is also, so for Godspark, there's a particular mechanic about how death happens. And so the game is built with essentially safeties for if you might have died, you can do some things and then you won't have died and the game goes on. But I had one playtester that just completely missed that. Either they didn't read that page, or they skimmed over it, or whatever, whatever it was. They were like, they were really enjoying the game, and they're like, this game is really hard. And then I asked them about this and that. And then I was like, wait, aren't you using the martyrdom procedure that's on page whatever what it was, 13? And he's like, oh, I totally missed that. I was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That it would be really hard without that. But they were still having fun, and they still like played like four times before they got in touch with me being like, this game is impossible.
When so I know the Kickstarter is coming up. Do you have an idea of when there will be something readable or playable for people? Because I'm really interested in this. I haven't heard anything solo that's along these lines, and I'm looking forward to giving it a shot myself when it's ready.
Oh, sure. I've gotten some playtest feedback already. I have something that's already pretty much that I'm sending to reviewers. So I'll be happy to send you over the reviewer's kit, and you can take a look at the game.
I would very much look forward to that. And again, I will have links to the Kickstarter below. Is there anything else that you want people to keep an eye out for, or any social media that I should include so people looking to follow you would be aware of it?
So social media is such a mess, but I am, M_Allen_Hall on Instagram, Threads, and, Twitter, or X, or whatever it is now. Probably the best way is, on my website, mallenhall.com. You can sign up for, I'm going to be starting to send out a newsletter once or twice a month with updates about game development stuff and some other role-playing game info. So that's probably the best way to follow what I'm up to.
Great. Well, everyone listening, I hope that you do keep an eye out. Godspark is going to be releasing very shortly after this interview. I'll have a link to it below and pay more attention there. I'll also have a link to this M. Allen Hall site directly, which has some of the projects we've talked about and some other ones, which I think you should pay attention to. There's some interesting stuff there.